Following are comments on William Shakespeare's Twelfth Night, Act II. Come what may, I do adore thee so. Viola's brother Sebastian has made it to shore and heads for Orsino's court, even as Antonio forms a strong attachment to him. In Act II, Scene 1, Antonio, who had rescued Sebastian from the ocean earlier, instantly forms an unbreakable bond with him. Antonio insists he will follow Sebastian to the Duke's court, no matter the danger to himself. Quote unquote, but come what may, I do adore thee so, that danger shall seem sport, and I will go. Act 2, Scene 1, Lines 41 through 42. Disguise, I see thou art a wickedness. Now that Olivia has fallen for Cesario, Viola realizes that her predicament will require a favorable disposition of time to resolve. By Act 2, Scene 2, Viola is in a state almost as extreme as that of Olivia and Duke Orsino, since she loves the latter and, as Cesario, is loved by the former. It's hard to see how Viola has any more control over the course of events than others in the play, which is to say, very little, even though some advantage seems to accrue from her disguise and the perspective it lends. While Twelfth Night is not a comedy of the humors, it is a comedy of our inevitable frailty in the presence of strong passions. First, Viola sees that her adoption of a gender disguise is a trap that's leading her towards frustration, and says, quote unquote, I am the man, ellipsis. Disguise, I see thou art a wickedness, wherein the pregnant enemy does much. Act 2, Scene 2, Line 24, and Lines 26 through 27. But secondly, Viola is able to generalize from her own experience as a woman, quote unquote. How easy is it for the proper false in women's waxen hearts to set their forms? Alas, our frailty is the cause, not we. For such as we are made of, such we be. Act 2, Scene 2, Lines 28 through 31. The we here is women, but it isn't hard to extend the point to capture a sense of the fragility and changeableness of humanity as a whole. Viola's abilities do not, however, make it possible for her to extricate herself from the difficult situation she is in. All she can say with honesty, therefore, amounts to a prayer. Quote unquote, O time, thou must untangle this, not I. It is too hard a knot for me to untie. Act 2, Scene 2, Lines 39 through 40. Dost thou think, because thou art virtuous, there shall be no more cakes and ale? Sir Toby takes grave offense at Malvolio's attempt to quiet his merrymaking, and Maria devises a plot to pay the Puritan back. Act 2, Scene 3, is an especially comic scene with Toby, Andrew, Maria, and Feste. Toby has been drinking and jesting as usual. First comes a parody of philosophical discourse. Toby declares, quote unquote, to be up after midnight and to go to bed then is early. So that to go to bed after midnight is to go to bed betimes. Does not our lives consist of the four elements? Act 2, Scene 3, Lines 6 through 9. They does, Sir Toby, they does. Next comes a call for some music. Feste's song suggests that love sees only the joy of the present, but also that any attempt to defer or banish time is of no account. Quote unquote, in delay there lies no plenty, then come kiss me, sweet and twenty, youth's a stuff will not endure. Act 2, Scene 3, Lines 48 through 50. Feste acknowledges the fragile condition of humanity, but he sanctions neither puritanical prudence nor face-value interpretation of pastoral ideals, such as Marlowe's The Passionate Shepherd to His Love. By now, Olivia has come around to the carpe diem side of the ledger, too. Sir Toby, Mariah, and Andrew are offended at Malvolio's demands that they stop enjoying themselves so much in Olivia's home. Quote unquote, "Do ye make an alehouse of my lady's house, that ye squeak out your cozier's catches without any mitigation or remorse of voice? Is there no respect of place, persons, nor time in you?" Act 2, Scene 3, lines 83 through 86. Malvolio goes after these noisy celebrants with just short of the anger that Jesus showed toward the money changers in the temple. In return, Toby's put-down of Malvolio is a classic. Quote unquote, "Art any more than a steward? Dost thou think because thou art virtuous there shall be no more cakes and ale?" Act 2, Scene 3, lines 105 through 107. "Sic semper superbis, thus always to the proud." Mariah's letter-based revenge scheme against Malvolio immediately wins the admiration of Sir Toby and Sir Andrew. Malvolio is easy prey because he is vain about his looks and believes he deserves a quick promotion to a higher social rank. Mariah says she will succeed because this Puritan hypocrite is, quote unquote, "so crammed as he thinks with excellencies that it is his grounds of faith that all that look on him love him." Act 2, Scene 3, lines 138 through 140. Her plan is as follows, quote unquote, "I will drop in his way some obscure epistles of love, wherein by the color of his beard, the shape of his leg, the manner of his gait, the expression of his eye, forehead, and complexion, he shall find himself most feelingly personated." Act 2, Scene 3, lines 143 through 146. Personated, that is, by Mariah, writing in Olivia's hand, with the aim of making Malvolio think the Countess is in love with him. Sir Andrew, however, is most concerned with his suit to Olivia failing and leaving him out of money. Quote unquote, "If I cannot recover your niece, I am a foul way out." Act 2, Scene 3, lines 168 through 169. This makes Andrew easy prey for Sir Toby, who can't resist manipulating such a mark. Our fancies are more giddy and unfirm than women's are. Orsino and Viola Cesario debate whether men or women are more capable of love. In Act 2, Scene 4, Viola Cesario and the Duke discuss love matters, and he opens up to her while Feste plays some music for them. Orsino admits that men's love is less constant than women's love. Quote unquote, "Our fancies are more giddy and unfirm, more longing, wavering, sooner lost and worn than women's are." Act 2, Scene 4, lines 31 through 33. But his subsequent remarks are contradictory. He insists that no woman could possibly love as strongly as he loves Olivia. Quote unquote, "There is no woman's sides can bide the beating of so strong a passion." Act 2, Scene 4, lines 90 through 91. To this claim, Viola Cesario alludes cryptically to her own love for Orsino and insists that, quote unquote, "We men may say more, swear more, but indeed, our shows are more than will. For still we prove much in our vows, but little in our love." Act 2, Scene 4, lines 113 through 115. In this context, the word still means always. In between this argument's halves, Feste's song connects love with death, the ultimate in consequences. Quote unquote, come away, death, and in sad cypress let me be laid. Fly away, breath, I am slain by a fair, cruel maid." Act 2, Scene 4, lines 49 through 52. Afterwards, he warns the Duke, quote unquote, "Pleasure will be paid one time or another." Act 2, Scene 4, lines 68 through 69. There is no purely comic universe, but we knew that. "Some have greatness thrust upon them." Malvolio is thrown into a reverie by Mariah's forged letter, purporting to be from an enraptured Countess Olivia. In Act 2, Scene 5, the conspirators turn Malvolio into a fool in a reverie. Maria is certain that the Puritan will become, quote-unquote, a contemplative idiot once he gets wind of the letter, and she isn't disappointed. Act 2, Scene 5, lines 16 through 17. Even before he spies out the letter, Malvolio is waxing hopeful. Quote-unquote, to be Count Malvolio and, quote-unquote, to have the humor of state and, ellipsis, telling them I know my place as I would they should do theirs. Act 2, Scene 5, line 30 and lines 47 through 49. Things go from absurd to more absurd once the letter comes into reading range. Malvolio muses on the inscription, quote-unquote, I may command where I adore, but silence like a Lucrece knife, with bloodless stroke my heart doth gore. M-O-A-I doth sway my life. Act 2, Scene 5, lines 94 through 97. He goes on to ponder the significance of, quote-unquote, some are born great, some achieve greatness, and some have greatness thrust upon him. Act 2, Scene 5, lines 126 through 128. To succeed, Malvolio need only don yellow stockings, cross-garter them, smile like a fool, and be rude to Sir Toby, which latter he does already. Act 2, Scene 5, lines 133 through 135 and 151 through 153. Sir Toby predicts that Malvolio, when he is finally disabused of his delusions of grandeur, will run mad. Act 2, Scene 5, lines 168 through 169. This hypercritical moralist has become just another foolish lover. He's a minor comic version of Euripides' Pentheus in the Bacchantes, to be destroyed by the Dionysian revelers whose fun he had tried to tamp down. Except that Pentheus didn't get to wear cross garters and yellow stockings. Indeed, a hint of violence had entered the picture earlier with the mention of Lucretia. Malvolio recognized the letter as Olivia's because the seal bore an impression of Lucrece, the noble Roman wife who killed herself after being raped by Sextus Tarquinius, son of the last Etruscan king, Tarquinius Superbus. Quote unquote, by your leave, wax, soft, and the impressure her Lucrece with which she uses to seal. Tis my lady. Act 2, Scene 5, lines 83 through 85. Malvolio is no Tarquin, but he is prideful, and he intends to move beyond his station in life by means of a most improper and self-aggrandizing suit to his employer. His station is, of course, that of a steward, which is a respectable but not exalted office. As Bertram Joseph points out in his introduction to A Shakespeare Workbook, most or all of the servants in an aristocratic house would be gentlefolk, not so-called base common people. Theater Arts Books, 1980, pages 22 through 25. To be fair, we should note that Malvolio is being tricked into his forwardness, but the point is that it's all too easy for Maria and company to trick him. Malvolio has been convinced by Maria's bogus letter that greatness, so-called, has simply been thrust upon him, if only he will make the proper gestures and dress right. A darker impression might be that, like so many deniers of life, Malvolio means to set up a rival order of perfection against the imperfect world around us all. What else is that but pride, a self-deluded desire for autonomy to cover one's fear and emptiness? Thanks for listening. The date of this audio recording is Monday, July 21st, 2025. The foregoing material is copyright 2025 by Alfred J. Drake. For quotations from Twelfth Night, I have relied on the Norton Shakespeare 3rd edition, 4-volume, genre-based format.